Paper 30, section 4, which is old single column, page 340. couple things I'm going to do up front. So the really big picture, remind yourself again, because now it becomes very apparent what they've been up to, you know, or what they're up to with these three papers at the end of part one. Like I pointed out, the name for this block, last block of papers in part one, becomes apparent when you reflect on the structure of the three. You have power, and then order, and then ascension. Okay, and if you know, you weren't too certain about the ascension part, and you definitely saw the power, and you could certainly kind of go with me, I think, when I was pointing out the order at the beginning of paper 30, look what they culminate with. You know, one of these, you know, one of the really nice succinct summaries of the ascension career in the Revelation. Okay, that's the whole point, is that you have power and order, and the two come together to allow for the possibility of ascension. And so they take you through the ascension career, and you know, and really the last paper about the finaliters is just an extension of this last section, you know, where they want to devote you know, an extended block of content, you know, real estate in the Revelation to fleshing out the finaliters. Okay, but it's, yeah, that's the whole purpose. And let me just remind you of what we had in the previous section also. We went through the courtesy colonies, and we got to that last little block, item number 7, where they pointed out to us that, you know, if you ever wondered, it's like, well, I mean, it seems like there's this whole elaborate order in the universe. You know, I'm starting down here, seemingly pretty removed from all of that complex order and the architectural worlds and all that. But they tell me I'm going to ascend up through that whole structure. It's like, well, where do I live? I'm going to be at this for who knows how long, you know, perhaps millions, billions of years or something, a long time. You know, where do I live all the time? And they point out, well, there's a courtesy colony on every architectural world where the ascenders live. So let me just read that last little block right before section 4, just kind of get us spun up again. So they called it, in general, the ascending pilgrims, because we're talking about not only ascending mortals, but those that are ascending with us in parallel. So the ascending pilgrims, as the ascending pilgrims are assigned to various services, and remember that was that whole theme about, you know, remember as you, if you flip back in the list, they said this is the working classification of the personalities, remember, so again in that context. So as the ascending pilgrims are assigned to various services in connection with their paradise progression, they are domiciled as a courtesy colony on the various headquarters spheres. While functioning here and there throughout a super universe, such groups are largely self-governing. They are an ever-shifting colony embracing all orders of evolutionary mortals and their ascending associates. And that one little element, you notice that you know, it's the universal classification. So they emphasize the ascending pilgrims once they're actually in part of the super universe picture directly. You know, they've gotten sent it up out of their local universe. And, you know, they remind you that by the time you get to that point, you're going to be largely self-governing, because there's a definitive integrity now in all those individuals. You know, remember, we've mentioned this a couple times, you're starting to have some pretty amazing responsibilities that are available to you, you know, even on Adentia, you know, even on the Constellation headquarters. You're starting to, you know, rub elbows with the Most Highs and working with them. And so definitely by the time you get to being actually part of the of the super universe proper, you know, you're very integrous, and so you have these places where you can be domiciled, and that courtesy colony is really sort of regulating themselves, you know, be they on the minor sector, major sector, or on the super universe headquarters. Okay, so that's the general category, but then they want to focus in, obviously, since they gave this to us, we're mortals. So like they're just about to say, because of that, they're going to, you know, devote a whole lengthy section here to ascending mortals in general. Or maybe I should say specifically. That in general, I mean, regardless to a degree of what kind of a mortal world you start out on, they're going to try to make it as general in that sense as possible. And we'll point out how they occasionally are kind of reminding you that's a little difficult because there's a lot of variations. But let's, why don't we just get started here. Why don't you just, read everything up to that, that paragraph on the planetary mortals, so that first little block there.
Including the list.
Yeah, the list and the paragraph after it, yeah.
Four, the ascending mortals. While the mortal survivors of time and space are denominated ascending pilgrims, when accredited for the progressive ascent to paradise, these evolutionary creatures occupy such an important place in these narratives that we here desire to present a synopsis of the following seven stages of the ascending universe career. 1. Planetary mortals. 2. Sleeping survivors. 3. Mansion world students. 4. Orancha progressors. 5. Super universe wards. 6. Havona pilgrims. 7. Paradise arrivals. The following narrative presents the universe career of an adjuster indwelt mortal. The sun and spirit-fused mortals share portions of this career, but we have elected to tell this story as it pertains to the adjuster-fused mortals, for such a destiny may be anticipated by all of the human races of Urantia.
Okay, so, that last bit, despite the fact, and we all know in many ways there's a lot of primitive nature still in this world because of the rebellion and the default, all of that got made up for in this specific issue at Pentecost. Now everyone can get an adjuster. So even if they're a very, very primitive mortal somewhere on this planet, and then backwoods of something or other, on this planet, they get the spirit of truth, and so they can get a thought adjuster, and so someone that probably, maybe only would have been able to be a spirit fuser to survive at all, now it's not going to get a virgin adjuster. They're going to get, an advanced or a supreme adjuster, and they're on track with everyone else. So it's a huge thing that Michael did. 2,000 years ago. Whoops, excuse me. And the one other thing there, excuse me, swallowed wrong there, with the you're mentioning the sun and spirit fused mortals. That paragraph I read at the beginning there. Notice that. I'm fine. Notice that when they mentioned that we're basically self-governing, once you leave the local universe, think about that in terms of those sun fusers, right? You have some individuals that, work their way all the way up to the local universe capital and haven't fused their adjuster yet. And there it's discovered that because they're not meant to fuse with that adjuster, they're going to be a sun-fused mortal. But, when they leave, they now are fused. So So definitely everyone that's leaving the local universe, including those last sort of in the process that might get fused with a fragment, the sun fusers, you know, they're fused with a fragment of divinity. And so there's an integrity when, you know, those mortals, you know, go into the super universe proper that is there in general. Okay. So and just kind of thinking about that, you know, that you can see it very, like I'm pointing out with the sun fusers, it's very immediate that there's an integrity there in the sun fuser. But you must be doing something externally overt. You must be going through some transition at the same time that establishes a new level of integrity. And that's manifests the fact that you take that final step from the highest level of a Maranja form to being a first stage spirit. Just to remind yourself that there has to be some literal laws to that. There must be some newfound measure of integrity that you embody in order to no longer need any scaffolding. Okay, no longer needing that Maranja scaffolding, this very artificial system that's set up in the whole local universe to, you know, keep you propped up when you can't really, you know, hold on to yourself yet. You know, you don't have the internal integrity yet to do it. Yeah.
The source of these sun-fused mortals or individuals?
Okay, yeah, so I was just going to mention that. So when they, at the end there, when they say, you know, it's going to pertain to the adjuster-fused mortals for such a destiny may be anticipated for all human races of Urantia. Well, you know, there is this one little exception. Okay, you're not going to be a spirit fuser, they're saying, but remember, they're one of us, you know, that's a very low number, if you want to say percentage, you know, of individuals that become sun fusers out of all the potential father fusers. But there is a possibility, right, that one of us, you know, won't fuse on the mansion worlds or on the constellation world. Maybe one of us goes all the way to Salvington to discover that we're a sun fuser. Okay. All right. So, you know, just like one of us may go all the way to the Isle of Paradise to discover, oh, I'm not going to be a finaliter. You know, I'm going to get snatched up by the Paradise Trinity. And, you know, I'm going to do another job.
You already know that for Pam.
Well, you know, you don't get to be a solitary messenger. but, okay, so anyway, that's, you know, so anticipated. See, I mean, they purposely kind of gave you a little bit of a fuzzy word there. Not just because, well, you might choose iniquity, but, you know, you might actually end up being a sun fuser too. Okay, now let's see. We're kind of working our way back through this. Why don't we just take the list there? As we were going through all the, you know, the previous pages of this paper, you know, we kept pointing out the numbers of groups of individuals that are in these lists. That's, you know, the number is important. And when we got into the universal classification, it was mostly sevens. And we pointed out though it's sevenfold because it's the Trinity imprint, a Trinity pattern that you see very definitively in the geography of the cosmos with the seven circuits of Avona. So here it is again. You know, remind yourself of this. You know, when you see this list of seven, that's telling you that there's another one of those subsets. If you take a certain world on the first circuit and a certain world on the second circuit, you know, all the way, you know, the seven circuits of Avona gives you this pattern, this sevenfold pattern of ascension. You know, so one of these is tied to the first circuit, one's tied to the second circuit, etc. Okay, it's the same thing again. That in order for there to be planetary mortals, in order for there to be Maranja progressors, in order for there to be Avona pilgrims, etc., there has to be this sevenfold pattern that's there, basically, you know, out of eternity through the Trinity, and is being manifest out here, giving you the way to be an ascender in seven steps. I think a lot of readers have, certainly noticed that just every time you turn around, there's another list of seven. But, make sure that people stop and recognize that that isn't just because whoever wrote this, loved the number seven, and say maybe the Jewish fascination with it is the number of completeness or something like that. Okay. It's a very definitive pattern. Nothing happens without a pattern behind it. Nothing. Okay? We have hair follicles because somehow there's a source of that on high somewhere. We have eyelashes. Everything about us somehow can be followed back into a pattern. Everything. Okay? So there's that, and that's kind of fun to think about, matching those up with the circuits, And if you begin to get a sense of what the general sort of imprint is that separates it into seven circuits in the first place, you can always look for that general imprint in these lists of seven. May they be there, may not. It may get kind of masked because of some very high specificity as you pick a particular world. Just wondering, it's like, well, does number one here tie with the first circuit of honor or the seventh circuit of honor? Are they? They're probably in order. That would probably be a reasonable assumption. So those sorts of things. Now, the one other thing in there is in that first paragraph. So while the mortal survivors of time and space are denominated ascending pilgrims, and they put it in italics, denominated ascending pilgrims, when accredited for the progressive ascent to paradise, etc. Okay, does anyone remember that accredited, and having an official designation for you as an ascending mortal, when is that official denomination time? At fusion, right. Before fusion, you're not designated an ascending son, technically. Out of mortal pilgrim, ascending son is the more specific term for us. You're not an ascending son until you fuse. So that's the accreditation point. Seems like, for instance, for a son fuser, they don't have that accreditation until... they're on Salvington if they're in this local universe. Okay. So that fusion point. If you're a spirit fuser, you've got it the moment you wake up in the first mansion world. You fuse with the spirit fragment.
And that will only be revealed in its proper time. How would you know?
Well, like they just pointed out, you're not going to be a spirit fuser. Okay. But there's a smaller, very small, chance that you might be a sun fuser. I don't know if I finished the thought. All right, so you're an ascending son at that fusion point. Before that, you're a faith son. That's your official designation. So, if you want to think of one of those sun fusers, you could say in a very direct way that they're ascending by faith all the way, to the capital of the local universe. As opposed to just by default, where if you fuse with a spirit fragment, spirit gravity grabs a hold of it, and the elevator's going up. Okay, that's just what's going to happen. You're literally falling to paradise via gravity, as it were. But there's still choices still, supremely in play. For that sun fuser to get all the way to the local universe capital by faith. So it kind of gives a whole new sense to that, Martin Luther sort of emphasis of, by faith alone, and that consecration of your will. All right. So ascending mortals, that's what we're examining here. So let's take the first one. You can see they've got just a little snippet here for on the mortal spheres.
One, planetary mortals. Mortals are all animal origin evolutionary beings of ascendant potential. In origin, nature, and destiny, these various groups and types of human beings are not wholly unlike the Urantia peoples. The human races of each world receive the same ministry of the sons of God and enjoy the presence of the ministering spirits of time. After natural death, all types of ascenders fraternize as one Urantia family on the mansion worlds.
Okay, so that's just that basic little statement. But let's look at what they wanted to emphasize basically in passing here. That even though we haven't gotten to the paper on ascending or inhabited worlds or the ascending suns or any of those that give you a little bit more details about all the differences. Mortals are all animal origin. So that's a given. And remember, even non-breather worlds have animals. They don't quite explain all the details there of how evolution fits into non-breathers, but there's still a very definitive linkage to animals and sort of upholding the lower domains of agitated mind with animals and all those sorts of issues still in play. So that's universal.
Sorry.
And then they point out that, even though there's lots of variations that you can read about, by and large, those issues are not immediately relevant to the ascension career, simply because once everyone dies and wakes up on the first mansion world as a Urantia being, a lot of that, is gone. Because it's only in this life that we perforce serve two masters. And that's in... on any mortal sphere, that's the case. Okay, that very fact that in the next life everyone is serving one master, means that what they say there, after natural death, all types of ascenders fraternize as one Urantia family on the mansion worlds. Okay, so enough said about that for the moment. But just you wonder. Yeah, with what little things they said there, what things might be directly tied to reflecting on a particular circuit of Avona, being tied to this element in the sevenfold pattern. Yeah, in terms of it seems like it's maybe just kind of a place filler, but see that would be the first place you might suspect. Something, is there something there that is much more than it immediately seems? You could ask yourself, now why did they put that word in? Try to figure out if you can think of a reason why that word is in there, and why that word, and try to test them all and see. It's like, do one of these maybe tell me something about one of the circuits of Avona? Okay, let's go to the next notch. Okay, now this one is, this is a very important little block in the book, because it's a point that you can you want to remember that it's here, because people are always asking, or I'm sure all of us, I'm certainly like this, I'm constantly trying to make sure I keep all the details about death and resurrection straight in my head, because there's all these different details. This is a very important little block that gives you some specifics. In a place in the book where they're purposely being very technical. It's not just a passing reference about resurrection, for instance. Okay, so this is an important block to remember about those issues. And people ask you about that. just read the first paragraph there.
Two, sleeping survivors. All mortals of survival status in the custody of personal guardians of destiny pass through the portals of natural death, and on the third period, personalize on the mansion worlds. Those accredited beings who have, for any reason, been unable to attain that level of intelligence mastery and endowment of spirituality which would entitle them to personal guardians, cannot thus immediately and directly go to the mansion worlds. Such surviving souls must rest in unconscious sleep until the judgment day of a new epoch, a new dispensation, the coming of a Son of God to call the rolls of the age and adjudicate the realm. And this is the general practice throughout all Nebedon. It was said of Christ Michael that when he ascended on high at the conclusion of his work on earth, he led a great multitude of captives. And these captives were the sleeping survivors from the days of Adam to the day of the Master's resurrection on Urantia.
Okay, so let's step through a number of things there. So let's start with the big pattern again. Okay, you know, just, you know, have you ever thought about this? That there's something in Havona that patterns the fact that there are sleeping survivors. If that wasn't in Havona, no one would sleep. You know, you'd get resurrected instantly. But because of something that's being imposed upon the universe of universes in Havona, there is a whole important integral element in the picture that some mortals must sleep for longer or shorter periods of time. If we don't, the universe can't exist. Yeah. Nothing could be if that element wasn't there. Every element is indispensable in the whole. Yeah. So see, when you think about that, your curiosity should be heightened about some of the things that they're saying in here. What exactly is some of the purpose of sleeping to the universe of universes? And for those who, might say, well, I want to wake up immediately. Well, because, you think if I don't, I'm not being of service. Well, no. You're somehow indispensably of service if you sleep. You're doing some great service to eternity and infinity by sleeping for a longer or shorter period of time. So even when you're not conscious, you're doing something for the whole. All right, now, all mortals of survival status in the custody of personal guardians of destiny pass through the portals of natural death. Okay, let's start with that part. So who remembers? What are the three different ways you could have your own personal pair of guardian angels? Guardians of destiny, then.
Third circle
is one of them, yeah.
If you're a reservist.
Supreme decision.
Yeah, the supreme decision. And what the supreme decision is a supreme decision to become godlike. Okay, I obviously can't chart out specifically what that means, but, the very important word in there is supreme. It's not a decision to become godlike. In other words, a finite decision to become godlike. I'm sure everyone in this room can be, it's pretty certain that they've at least made a finite decision to become godlike. But have you made a supreme decision? It's like, well, what does that mean, Chris? Yeah, exactly. What does that mean? Have I somehow taken my little pea brain and stretched it to the size of the supreme being and come into synchrony with the supreme being in that decision, or any decision for that matter? It's like, boy, I wouldn't presume that, very quickly. So you notice that, that this is kind of geared toward basically third circler, sort of setting aside those, special equivalents, you might say, to that. But the point is that, whether you're a reservist or you've made the supreme decision, in this one little area, there is something that's equivalent to what you have in a much bigger sense as a third circler. A third circler has this little area appropriately supremacized and, a bunch of other things too. Okay. all right. And then, this is one of the three spots in the book where they remind you that don't totally simplistically universalize what you guys experienced on this world with Michael, where he died on Friday and was resurrected on Sunday, on the third day. Here, and two spots in the other really kind of precise area in the book about all these issues, up in paper 112, two spots, two times up there, you know, they give you the technical thing. It's on the third period. The third period. It's like, well, what is a period? Yeah, exactly. What is a period? What it fundamentally is, it means that it's a threefold process. There's a beginning to it, a middle to it, and an end to it. Those are the three periods, beginning, middle, and end. There's the day you die, the day you're resurrected, that's straightforward. The mysterious period is the period in the middle. Some novels are very long. Some are not even novels. They're short stories, etc. Okay, you know, between the, you know, the beginning and the end of a story, the middle can have all kinds of size and have all sorts of different ways it plays out. Okay, same here. The middle of the story is where all of the flexibility is, and it's where the purpose of sleeping survivors is going to manifest. The whole purpose is that middle and its ability and its variability. It has a potential of variability built into it. Okay? And if it's not apparent already, just thinking about this, I mean, you know, who's looking for this variability? I mean, this is God the Supreme. This is involved in the whole, evolving. And that when all is said and done, there'll be no coincidences of what's gone on in the finite here. Because when all is said and done, the Supreme has been over-controlling the whole picture. And so I sleep for a certain length of time, seems random. Gene sleeps for another length of time, seems to be random, etc. When all of a sudden I'm going to go, oh, if Chris hadn't slept for that precise time, if Gene hadn't slept for that precise time, the Supreme wouldn't have come together. It's all some sort of elaborate, precise system about who sleeps how long so that, you know, that affects who you interact with and when and where. And see, it's all this complex system. You know, and from our perspective, this is kind of a clutch, see, in that system where, you know, it allows some synchronization of you in the whole, depending on how long you sleep, so that you wake up precisely when you should, so that everything that you experience in your ascension is just exactly what it should be. Whereas if you'd waken up 10 minutes earlier, it wouldn't have been so.
Go back to sleep, dude.
You know? So, you know, that person that sleeps, you know, from the time, you know, that Adam and Eve arrive in the second garden, all the way until, until the resurrection day, you know, slept for all that time, that's exactly how long they need to sleep, so that their ascension is just exactly what it ought to be. Their experience is going to be just perfect because they slept that long. You know, if they had been woken up in a special resurrection, you know, 10 minutes after, you know, Adam and Eve got to the second garden or something, everything would have been out of whack for their whole ascension career. They needed to sleep that long so that they could experience exactly what they could experience, and the Supreme could come into existence. If they hadn't slept that long, the Supreme would never form. All these things. Okay. You know, down the road, the ultimate would never form. God, the absolute. I mean, it's all hinges upon that. Some precise, you know, time.
It's all your fault.
Okay? You know, and the fact that free will, you know, is in full play with all this. See, that's the amazing thing. I've tried to get people to remember about what the Supreme does. Is there's, you have complete free will, you know, going to in this mix. And yet, there's this over-control of precision. You know, and how can that be? How can you have all of this free will and it still all comes out the way it needs to be in the essential elements? It's because your finite decisions, and hence all of the finite facts that result from those finite decisions, can be accommodated by what? The Supreme Mind, right? The adaptability of the Supreme Mind. You know, there's supreme adaptability in the Supreme Mind. It can adapt to any set of finite circumstances. You can feed it any set of finite facts, any conceivable set of finite facts, and it can adapt to them and get what it wants in the end. It's above all of those differences. It can coordinate them into the whole they needed to be coordinated into. So you can choose iniquity or not. It can adapt to that. It doesn't need to predetermine your choice of oblivion or eternity in order for it to work. Because you're finite, it's supreme. It's transcendent. Okay. You always have that transcendent mind that's over-controlling. Okay, and back to the point here. So on the third period, you're resurrected. Yeah, and the simplest thing in play, there's nothing complicated going on. We're some number of light years away from Gerizim. Okay? Our transport, you know, it's going to take our soul there. Doesn't go at infinite speed. It only goes at 3 times the speed of light. If it's 15 light years to Gerizim, it takes you 5 years to get there, to haul your Marantia brain there. Okay? They can't just snap their fingers and get your Marantia brain there. They've got to take it there. They've got to transport it there. So, you know, that's the main thing that is in play. So you think about that. It's like, well, you know, so everyone from that world, there's a certain time it takes them to get there, and those people are way on the outskirts of Satania, you know, it takes them longer. And yeah, if those worlds weren't exactly where they are, so that it takes a certain time for each one of them to get there, the Supreme could never come into existence. Worlds have to be just where they are, so that the time lags are just what they are. Everything has to be just so. Because remember, what we're doing here is a power personality synthesis, the Supreme Being. Every ultimaton and every being is in the equation. Every ultimaton and every being is in the same equation. Everything has to be just so to make the Supreme come into existence. You know, and it's not micromanaged. Obviously, I can move that cup and I don't stop the Supreme from coming into existence. Okay, because it has Supreme Mind that can adapt to that change of finite circumstances. Okay, but when all is said and done, automatons end up where they're supposed to be. You know, there's not going to be any random location of automatons when the Almighty Supreme takes a hold of the entire grand universe and puts every automaton exactly where it's supposed to be. There's not going to be any stray gas or dust floating through the cosmos or anything like that. Everything will be exactly in place. Down to the automaton, every single being, everything. Okay, so, you know, just see that's the beauty of letting the revelation, you know, give you a new set of initial assumptions. Because if you let it have the leeway that it needs to speak, you begin to stand in awe of the phenomenon. You know, rather than you, well, I want the universe to be set up so that I get exactly what I want when I want it, and et cetera, you know, and where a planet is located is utterly irrelevant, you know, and it's random and... No, there's nothing like that in the universe. There's order. Complete order. Every star coincidentally ends up just where it needs to be as it comes flying out of the melee of a little spiral nebula and stuff. Everything coincidentally ends up just where it should be.
Yeah. Well, I was listening to you, and I was picturing something like ice crystallizing, you know, into a fixed state in which every molecule has its precise place. But then I thought, no, that's totally wrong. It has to be totally wrong.
Yeah.
This is going to be a crystallization of moving parts.
It's a crystal of motion, not a crystal of matter. Everything is a motion. You know, that's why I tried to stress, I mean, you do not want to demand a static universe. Because you, when you experience the complete motion that is a Havona world, when you're immersed in that, everything is moving and dynamic. You know, it's kaleidoscopically energetic, like you can't even comprehend, and you're right there with it, totally prepared to engage the fullness of that and just melt into it. Go with the flow of the whole thing. Instead of, I want everything nailed down with golden nails, you know, and I don't want anything to move. You know, no, you don't want a place like that. You don't want mansion worlds like that. You don't want architectural spheres like that. You certainly don't want Havona worlds like that. You want them to be just incredibly dynamic because you're going to be right there with it. Okay? You want to be free. Stasis is not freedom. Stasis is prison.
Ask your adjuster.
Right. Right. He'll tell you. The adjuster knows very well why you're initially inclined to like static things. He's locked in this crystal of your mind. It won't move, you know? Okay? It's like, flow for Pete's sake. Okay? You know? Because you're just so rigid. You lock down your mind with your absolute dimension of your personality. You refuse to let anything move, you know? And it's just a straitjacket for your adjuster. Yeah. As I was saying that, the dynamic. You know, just remember, you know, we have no idea. They can't even begin to explain to us what kind of dynamic you have, say, on a Havona world. But just think about the very first big architectural sphere you finally get to, Gerasim. You know, and just a couple little facts they give you. For instance, they tell you, if you go to Mount Seraph, on Gerasim, and to just lay back in your lawn chair and gently watch the transport seraphim take off. Every 3 seconds. Yeah, that's Mount Seraph. I mean, every 3 seconds, all those power beings are doing all that stuff they describe and launching one of those every 3 seconds. Okay. The activity level there, okay, is frightening to think about. But you won't be, I mean, you'll go there purposely. It won't be overwhelming. You'll just go, you know, to experience that level of dynamic and sort of be with it. It'll be just so exciting. So even getting through the first 7 mansion worlds allows you to be comfortable in a setting, you know, where a giant planet-sized cannon is going off every 3 seconds. Okay? And and it's not chaotic, it's not scary, it's not frightening, it's delightful, it's magnificent, you know? And it's precision, you know, to see power and personality, you know, locked in this dance like that can do that incredible, complicated thing every 3 seconds. And never miss a beat. It's all perfect to the 90th decimal place every time. You know? All right, so, you know, and that's just Gerasim, okay? It's just Gerasim. Okay, let's see. Is there any important things we haven't gotten into there yet? Okay, they mentioned accredited beings again, who have for any reason been unable to attain. Okay, so now there, see, when they say unable to attain the level of intelligence, mastery, and endowment of spirituality, okay, that's very third circle-y, you know, description there, see? Okay. All right, so, you know, there, you're, like I said, I mean, always when you're thinking about things, you know, use that as the anchor point. Figure out what the heck a third circler means. You know, and then the other issues that they might bring in, you know, like say, oh, if you're trying to figure out the prerequisites for adjuster indwelling, you know, before Pentecost, you know, start with that very definitive thing and then understand the others relative to it. It's like, okay, so somehow this must have some little measure of equality to a third circler and that specific important issue. You know, so they're doing the same thing here. They're always encouraging you. Think of it in terms of, you know, of the psychic circles and the sevenfold. You know, get this pattern, and you know, if you figure out what's going on at a third circular level, you know, use that as your starting point of understanding. Okay, so that's why they reference it like that. Let's see. What else do we have there? Okay, they're talking about, right, the long times you might sleep. Oh, and then they throw in, notice this little tidbit they throw in. So this whole bit about whether or not, you know, they talk about resurrection here. They talk about, okay, you might get resurrected in a special resurrection. You know, it has no fixed timing. You might be a millennial resurrection every 1,000 years, you know, the inner circuit of Avona going around once. Okay, so there's these millennial resurrections. And then there's the dispensational ones. And, you know, when all the places they talk about it, you know, it seems like, okay, that must be what it's like everywhere. But notice this, okay? And this is the general practice throughout all Nebadon. That it's the dispensational resurrections. It's like, oh. Okay, so by and large, the way Michael has set up the local universe here, our Michael, as a rule, it's dispensational. Now, the exceptions are going to be the special and the millennial. But apparently, there's other local universes. That might not be the case. Where, you know, maybe there's a local universe where the rule is special. And regular things are an exception. You know, because that Michael is working on a totally different part of the Supreme there. You know, that has a much greater degree of what we might call kind of ad hoc, you know, character to it, where you're really, you know, micromanaging it a little bit more, not just sort of letting the Supreme sort of dictate things. I mean, here, see, this is telling you something about Nebadon. If the rule is the dispensation, and the dispensation thing is very much in the hand of evolution, in the hand of the Supreme, you know, who and how long a dispensation is, and, you know, who gets resurrected, how many there is, you know, in that big bulk resurrection. See, so in this local universe, it's much more left to the Supreme than some sort of a real, more father-like micromanagement of the situation. Okay, so that's telling you a really interesting little tidbit, you know, and that feeds into, if you're going to speculate about what Michael might do, you know, in terms of interventions and stuff, it's like, well, one of the background facts is he's set it up so that he's not interfering, you know, as much as some greater sons in resurrection. So maybe you would just, you know, you could speculate he's going to be very hands-off and, you know, and let things evolve for a long time before he comes back, or, you know, before a magisterial son comes, or whatever. You know, I mean, any sort of these speculations about when something important might happen. That's in play. You know, and so, you know, it gives a whole new sense, too, when, you know, when he said, it's not, my hour has not yet come. See, this would be behind it. That he's very, very deferential to letting things play out, you know, and once it becomes very clear what the Supreme is up to, you know, then and only then would he do something. You know, when it's very clear what's up with the world, you know, the mortals on a world, okay, now we'll do a dispensation, as opposed to being more maybe proactive, you might say, or something with these dispensations and sort of, you know, dictating a little bit more in an interventionary way about how a world steps along, kind of micromanaging, like I said, you know, a little bit more, as opposed to just kind of letting it slosh around as the Supreme wants it to. Okay, so that's a fun little tidbit. See? You know, the fact that it's, you know, it doesn't say Orvinton, it says Nebadon. See, so there must be quite a tapestry, see, 100,000 different variations on this theme of resurrection in Orvintun. Yep.
We're a decimal planet, so that's also an argument for more of a hands-off approach, because how would they know what is the consequences of these new differences if
right.
you're continually going in there and micromanaging?
Right, exactly. Got to let it play out. Yep, exactly. So that's what I'm saying. See, when you see some of these things, it's like, oh, wow, that gives me a whole new perspective for thinking about a number of things like decimal world status and those things. Right? You want to notice these little tidbits. It modifies your set of initial assumptions when you're thinking about things, trying to interpret various parts of the book.
What if you have somebody that's developed a philosophy that, you know, I think conditions are going to get so drastic that we'll all be assigned jobs by the government, you know, as a response to, why don't you have a job?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, you know, that's kind of letting things play out, you know, on a very, you know, I mean, it's, I guess, deferring your will of taking initiative on your own and just kind of...
Well, it depends on how you think about that.
Right,
I mean,
right.
you know, think about... where there might be a measure of truth to someone having, you know, an ideal, you know, or so-called ideal in their head, that's maybe the best way for a country to be set up, you know, that there's a very centralized control of things. It's like, well, that's what kind of we're talking about. I mean, there are undoubtedly local universes. I mean, we talked about this some about just the first super universe, you know, might have this in a very big way. You know, that it might be very, very clamped down, father-like, you know, because of the first master spirit being in charge of the first super universe. But, you know, even here, you know, there's bound to be a local universe where there's a lot greater centralized control of things. And then other local universes that are completely on the other end. And so... the fact that all of us get our consciousness from on high, you know, and we're all highly ignorant, we're groping around in the mind space trying to come up with what's true, you know, you could get it. It's like, well, you know, I don't know, I think I feel that there's some truth to this. You know, it may not just be because of our circumscribed ignorance that someone would think that. They may be picking this up. There's a little reality response when they think that thought. Because there is a local universe somewhere, you know, where that's really kind of the way it's run. So then you got to figure out, it's like, well, is that the local universe I live in, or is that the local system I live in? You know, I mean, what am I supposed to be doing? You know, another thing that feeds into this sort of stuff about the variation of resurrection. Remember, there's some local universes where there's a major percentage of spirit fusers, a great number of the worlds, you know, and the whole local universe are purely spirit-fused worlds, you know, not just when they're primitive, but all for all time. They don't have father fuses at all on those worlds. You know, I think I remember, don't they say that when there's one nearby that's almost 50%?
50-50.
Yeah, almost 50-50. I think it's, you know, it's just you know, greater than 50% are adjuster fusers, but, you know, it's almost 50-50, if I remember right. See, so, I mean, think about that. If there's a high percentage of spirit fusers in your local universe, that might have a lot to do with, you know, this whole resurrecting thing. Yeah. You know, in that mode, you know, when you think, you know, like we're talking about spirit fusers, sun fusers, father fusers, you know, so you have a spirit fuser that is, basically given the official designation of ascending sun right when they wake up in the first mansion world. You know, but they just stay in the local universe. You know, so they you know, their whole sort of ascension scheme is in the local universe. You have that sun fuser that really their kind of official ascension doesn't begin until they're out of the local universe. You know, so they're just kind of, you know, working their way up to get to where they're really destined to do their ascension. You know, and so they're at the individual super universe level is what they're really meant for. You know, the father fusers, they're not meant for the local universe or the super universe. They're meant for the collective super universe level, like we've talked about. As in a finaliter, you're functioning in that collective domain. And And so to think about, you know, where it's very definitive that sort of as soon as a spirit fuser gets into the local universe, you know, off the mortal world, their ascension begins. As soon as the sun fuser, you know, literally as soon as they get out of the local universe, their ascension begins. But we see, you know, we fuse it at all these different times, but somehow that must all be some sort of a beginning point, a definitive beginning point in the bigger picture of the collective super universe level. There must be some threshold, you know, and from a local perspective, it seems like it's not localized. there must be something in common. We must all be passing some common higher threshold level, analogous to those threshold levels that the spirit and sun fusers are. So that's kind of an interesting thing to speculate on. What exactly is that? You know, what point relative to the whole are you crossing, seemingly at a random time on the fifth mansion world, or, you know, or whatever? You know, what is that common point that you've reached in this greater context? We probably won't appreciate that until we get to the sixth circuit of Avona. Once we kind of, you know, really graduate from our limitation to a particular super universe, you know, once you transcend your master sun on the seventh circuit, and, you know, maybe at that point you'll begin to understand a little bit better why it was that you took that, you know, reached that fusion point when you did, you know, how that sinks into the big picture. All right. So, yeah, then we are, you know, the last part there, you know, we covered that. So, yeah, and remember, the one significant thing about the dispensation here, you know, they mention that, you know, because of the rebellion and the circuits being cut off, remember that unless, even if you were a first circler, okay, before, I mean, technically this is even before Pentecost, it's not just before the dispensational resurrection, you know, before you had the Spirit of Truth, even if you were a first circler, you couldn't get resurrected right away, unless they did a special resurrection for you, or you got, you know, you were in one of the millennial resurrections, you know. So there were some people that, for whatever reason, you know, got resurrected on Sunday when Jesus was resurrected, that were first circlers way back when, and, you know, had been sleeping that whole time. Think about that curious element. So, yeah, you know, that coincidentally, because of the rebellion, some first circler had to wait for a long time, and because he had to wait for a long time, certain things coincidentally happened that couldn't have happened any other way, and the Supreme could come into existence. See, all those things are going, in the end, are going to be all indispensable. But they're indispensable in the antecedent following sense. They don't have to be preordained. You know, so there's not a predestination sort of a thing going on, you know, in the simplistic sense. Anyway, I hope that kind of, you know, gets a more dynamic appreciation of this. This sleeping thing is some huge element in the universe that is indispensable and has to have all these variations for seeming vicissitudes and whatnot in order for it to all work. If it didn't have that variability, it couldn't come out in the end. All right, let's read some more.
The passing of time is of no moment to sleeping mortals. They are wholly unconscious and oblivious to the length of their rest. On reassembly of personality at the end of an age, those who have slept 5,000 years will react no differently than those who have rested 5 days. Aside from this time delay, these survivors pass on through the ascension regime identically with those who avoid the longer or shorter sleep of death.
Who are those that avoid the longer or shorter sleep of death?
The third circle.
No, that's a shorter. That's a shorter sleep. Who survives? See, longer or shorter?
Fusing on your...
Yeah, if you fuse on your mortal sphere, right? Okay. Right? Okay, and on the shorter side, okay, you know, let's eliminate having to be transported any distance. Okay, what if I'm in the probationary nursery? Okay? It's a pretty short trip from the probationary nursery to the first mansion world. Okay? I can get there really, they can take me there really quick. Okay, when it's time for me to die in the probationary nursery and be resurrected as a Marantia, being on the first mansion world. So travel time, you know, in that middle part of the beginning, middle, end story is not an issue. But, you know, is it just a random number? Did they say those who sleep 5,000 years will react no differently than those who have rested for 5 days? It's just randomly. Well, I like the number 5. Let's just throw 5 days in there. Probably not. Probably not. What? Why is it say 5 days? You guys should be very suspicious of this. Like, Now I'm remembering that they tell me that from the time that the transport lands with either the prince's staff or with Adam and Eve, from the time of landing until they're resurrected is 10 days, it says, for both of those. Okay, and that's because you're doing this often, you know, the boonies. You got to cart the portable equipment and whatnot to this world to do this. This is probably, see, how long it takes for them to build you a body. So it's at least going to be 5 days. I mean, even if you fuse and get there instantly, okay, which is just like, you know, getting there from the probationary nursery, say, okay, so there's no travel time issue, it probably takes them 5 days to build the body. Okay. So that's most likely, see, why that's there. You got to build that Marantia body, and it's got to be very, very precise. I mean, the angel has to sponsor this. I mean, the angel's got to give them the precise specifications of your soul, because they got to build a Marantia body that can be the Marantia brain for. It's got to match in perfectly. So they got, you know, all these very tight specifications they got to build this body to. Okay, that's probably why it's probably 5 days to build a body. So. See, so again, see, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, so it's not literally 3 days, is it? It's on the third period, and the middle is at least 5 days, okay?
And the middle shorter than five.
Now, you go, well, what about Jesus? I mean, he was a true man, and he was resurrected as a Marantia being, and it didn't take 5 days. Yeah, but remember what they say about that. The normal crew that does this, we're told, Gabriel said, no. Well, actually, Gabriel is even told, if I remember right. I mean, they were told, you know, all of you back off. You have nothing to do with this resurrection. Remember, there's a group of paradise beings that come, that came to this planet. Okay? And that time from when they started building the body till they ended it, it's a lot shorter than 5 days or 10 days. Or anyone remember the beginning of that description, right at the beginning of the, you know, when he's about to be resurrected, about to emerge from the tomb. Those paradise beings, take up their places, and 17 minutes later, they've built a body for him. 17 minutes they built a body for Jesus. They're unrevealed beings. We have no idea who they are. They're paradise beings that are unrevealed. Some special technicians from paradise come out here and they build a body that can be an incarnate body for a creator son in 17 minutes.
They didn't have a transit time issue.
Right, they didn't have that, right, those issues either, right. Right, so when they tell you that there's all these physical and Marantia energies that begin to swirl, there's some incredible kaleidoscopic, you know, thing that's going on where they're taking raw materials and, you know, building a body.
Well, they're so close to the Trinity right there. See, I mean, and they're coming down to here they're basically reflecting the Trinity down here.
But if you don't. If you aren't going to get resurrected by special unrevealed paradise beings, if you got to have the normal crew do your resurrection for you, looks to me like it's going to be a 5-day build, okay? All right. All right. I was so hoping that I was that special. You know, I deserve unrevealed beings to be.
I want to be resurrected now.
Well, then first we have to kill you. So you might want to rethink that.
I'll be honest, the sentence that says on reassembling a personality at the end of an age, it's my understanding that we really don't know where the personality goes.
We'll get there in a little bit. That's next block. Wait till we get there.
No, we just read that.
No, no, it's coming up. Look in the next block. It's in italics even. It's coming up, this specific thing. So wait till we get there.
Okay.
Yeah. all right, let's read that last little.
These dispensational classes of world pilgrims are utilized for group branch activities in the work of the local universes. There is a great advantage in the mobilization of such enormous groups. They are thus kept together for long periods of effective service.
So if you haven't figured it out like we already have in going through this, what's the hint of that last paragraph? See, it's very important. There is a great advantage in the mobilization of enormous groups. I mean, in other words, you couldn't do everything that needs to be done to get to supremacy if you didn't have dispensational resurrections with big groups. You know, some people need to sleep for 300,000 years or whatever, or it won't work. So be comfortable with whether your sleep is long or short. Know that you are serving the Supreme, you know.
You're not
going to
know how long you sleep.
You have no idea how long, you know. It's an instant for all of us, you know, whether it's 3,000 years or 5 seconds. But just, you know, in retrospect, you wake up and if you discover, oh my goodness, I slept for 300,000 years, you know, that's probably not going to be for any of us. But, you know, if you had been alive, you know, long ago, and you wake up and it's like, oh my goodness, 300,000 years passed by since I was back on my mortal world. You can look back and say, ah, wow, did I do an incredible service? I gave up 300,000 years. It's a sacrifice that I made for the sake of the Supreme. You could look back on it, like, even though you didn't, you know, technically sacrifice really anything, but, you know, in terms of an idealistic desire when you died,
right,
compared to what you discovered when you woke up, you should take a hold of that and say, I'm proud that I gave that up for the sake of the Supreme. Okay. All right. All right. So that's sleeping survivors. I hope that is a lot more dynamic now than it was as just this black time. You know, when there's nothing registering on the heart meter. Okay. This is some huge thing that we can't even begin to imagine, the mystery that's involved in exactly who sleeps when, where, and, you know, and whatnot, how this all fits into the Supreme. All right.
3, Mansion World Students. All surviving mortals who reawaken on the Mansion Worlds belong to this class. The physical body of mortal flesh is not a part of the reassembly of the sleeping survivor. Physical body has returned to dust. The seraphim of assignment sponsors the new body, the Marantia form, as the new life vehicle for the immortal soul and for the indwelling of the returned adjuster. The adjuster is the custodian of the spirit transcript of the mind of the sleeping survivor. The assigned seraphim is the keeper of the surviving identity, the immortal soul, as far as that is evolved. And when these two, the adjuster and the seraphim, reunite their personality trusts, the new individual constitutes the resurrection of the old personality, the survival of the evolving Marantia identity of the soul. Such a reassociation of soul and adjuster is quite properly called a resurrection, a reassembly of personality factors. But even this does not entirely explain the reappearance of the surviving personality. Though you will probably never understand the fact of such an inexplicable transaction, you will sometime experientially know the truth of it if you do not reject the plan of moral survival.
Okay. So see, like I said, Sydney, so here's where they're bringing that up again specifically. All right. So, you know, a lot of this is explained in more detail in other spots, but, you know, they're giving a reminder that in terms of memories, since you don't get to take your brain with you, if you're going to have any memories when you wake up, you know, and like I say, a spirit fuser doesn't, someone has to have the memories that are genuinely tied to your personality consciousness. Okay, those are spiritizable memories. So the adjuster has, a copy, if you will, of those memories. Okay, and the soul is, you know, that Marantia structure is shaped just so that when it's reanimated, everything can lock in and the personality can re-identify with that Marantia self, just like the personality was identified with the adjutant self before that. Because, of course, that, you know, we know that separate self that I have right now, you know, I've got this soul somewhere, right, I picture that, you know, with Marantia mind seated on it, it's a separate self, it's making decisions right now, it's thinking, but it's a copy self, it's not an independent self. All of the personalized, you know, self that I have, all of the adjutant self that I've lifted up, that I've spiritualized, that I've personalized, is a copy of that uplifted adjutant self in that Marantia self. There's no personality identified with that Marantia self right now. It's just an entity, not a being. The personality is identified with your adjutant self, you know, specifically with your spiritualized adjutant self, okay? Your personalized self. And so here, that soul is just so, because it's so precisely a copy of your personalized self here, that personality, and, you know, here they italicize it to remind you, we're not talking about the manifestation of personality through an energy system that we sometimes use the word personality for. Here we mean literally the existential thing, you know, in quotes, that comes from the Father, that is very mysterious. It's not an energy at all or anything. You know, it's this pattern. It's this influence that comes from the Father. You know, that's why they italicize it. That personality can re-identify, and everything begins to manifest just as it was manifesting before. And you notice they reminded you, where did they say that? As far as it has evolved. I'm trying to remember, you know, remind you that don't get too excited about how personalized yourself is right yet, okay? This is a pretty embryonic thing. But when you wake up, it'll be just as it was before, no matter how small it is here, and no matter how unrecognized it is here in distinction from your merely animal origin self, which is not going to be resurrected. It'll be just so. And you notice how they word that. They say, such a reassociation of soul and adjuster is quite properly called a resurrection. Okay, why are they saying it like that? Because, you know, the word resurrection is, in terms of its coinage, really, you know, is very tightly tied to, you know, rising from the grave, you know, basically, at least from the dead. And, you know, but they mentioned right at the beginning, okay, there's no literal material resurrection from the grave, which is really kind of what your word resurrection kind of implies, you know, in its coinage. But they're saying, in a true sense, there is a resurrection. You know, it's quite properly called a resurrection, because what went inanimate, the personalized self, it becomes animate again. Just exactly where it left off. No break. Okay, so it's quite properly in the true sense of, you know, of rising from the grave.
There's a TV show now called that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Resurrection.
Yeah, and they're just like they were.
All right, so, yeah, and then to Sydney's question, you know, this whole bit about, though you will probably never understand the fact of such an inexplicable transaction. Okay, this, you know, I've tried to emphasize it a number of times when we've talked about personality. You have to remember that just how fundamentally inscrutable this existential fact of personality has to be, you know, for all beings, high and low, okay, because of its source. You know, its source is beyond what anyone has any immediate access to analyze the mechanics of it. You know, it seems to come from nowhere, you know, go nowhere, but have perfect precision and a very deep mystery of mysteries. See, the revelators don't understand why it is that, like, for instance, right now, I have a particular specific genetic structure that leads to a particular adjutant mind that's attuned to that. You know, so that I have a particular, you know, relatively particular adjutant self that a very absolutely unique personality identifies with. They don't know exactly why there is this tight linkage, but they know. Maybe they've just been told by their superiors which parts of me are critical to that re-identification. So whether or not I get resurrected on the probationary nursery, where they literally, you know, would build a material body for me, or I get resurrected in Marantia form, you know, they do it just as they're supposed to make these bodies, and sure enough, the exact same personality re-identifies. And I've pointed out, when they talk about the probationary nursery, they describe that that essential genetic and material nature that they have to exactly copy, the potential identity. You know, in a sense, your soul, even at this point before resurrection, is in that potential mode. It isn't literally an identity until personality re-identifies with it. Okay? But see, it has this fundamental, precise, mysterious thing that the exact same personality re-identifies with it that did before. And they do the same thing in the probationary nursery. They change a bunch of things from what that child was like when they died on their mortal sphere. But they don't change certain things, which they don't explain, but there's some certain subset of things that have to be exactly the same, and when they make it exactly the exact same personality, even if the child died before the personality identified in the first place, right? You know, if they died prior to the personality identifying, you know, even on their mortal sphere, they make it just so that the same personality that would have identified if they hadn't died prematurely identifies on the probationary nursery, okay? Okay, see, and that's what they're talking about. You know, we'll probably never understand exactly how that works. Like I've pointed out, because it's just a complete backdoor phenomenon. You know, it's shrouded in the mysterious linkage within the universal one of infinity between the first center and the Paradise Trinity. It's deeply transcendent and mysterious how the left hand and the right hand, see, as it were, are sync together like this. How is it that the matter, you know, which seems as removed as you can get from personality, is not removed from it all in some way? You know, like we talked about, you know, if you lay it out horizontally, you know, if you go matter, mind, spirit, personality, but see, that personality can get to the matter around the back door instead of having to go, you know, this way, which everyone could see, and there wouldn't be any mystery. They could figure out the mechanics of how this worked, but it doesn't get there that way. Somehow it's connected around the other way around the ellipse. Okay? You know, from the Universal Father through the first source, through the first center, into the Paradise Trinity, into the matter. Okay? in a triunity sense into the matter. I mean, it's all this deep backdoor mystery to how that happens.
They're so close on paradise that they're just distinguished by name anyway.
Right, and there's that. But even then, right. You know, if it was that front doorway, see, you know, they could have right. they could observe it. See?
No, I agree with you. It's a back door.
Right.
But maybe it involves even starting to have a glimpse. It's getting to know the Universal Father first. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, really, until you really know, and some people aren't going to get to that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at least you might see the spirit pattern, and then, you know.
Well, see, the reason why they're a little bit qualified like that, you notice they say, though you will probably never understand? Okay, you know, why is it worded that way? It's because they're leaving the door open. I mean, we do have a fragment. You remember who's writing this? You go, and, you know, who is it? It's a mighty messenger. Okay. Okay, so they have a father fragment, and so they know a lot of things that we'll know one day, okay. But still, he says, you will probably never. Okay, so in other words, the mighty messenger doesn't know yet.
He's even seen though, the father, right?
Right, seen the father, done all those things, see.
By the Trinity.
Okay, but, you know, he knows that those of us who have another thing that's not that different from personality in terms of mystery of mysteries, in terms of backdoor linkage, you know, a father fragment. See, there might be a potential somehow where way down the road, because of that, to get some inkling of a little bit more how the backdoor works, okay, because you have an adjuster.
Yeah.
Maybe in the depths of the absentite age somewhere, or maybe post-absentite age or something like this. See? No, they do.
Okay.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
So do you think the personality is carried along by the adjuster or by the seraphim?
Neither. See again, the yeah, right. See, that's the thing. See, the personality is not a thing that can be carried by anyone.
It's like a gravity.
It's just, you know, that's why I always, you know, you have to sort of use a word like thing or something. I mean, but it's not a thing in any sense that anyone knows things to be things. Matter, mind, or material, mind, or spiritual thing. It's just, it's not even a deity substance thing. It's, you know, it's just this pattern, this influence, you know, from, that's of the nature of the first source. Okay, you know, basically of the nature of the essence of the infinite one, very transcendent, and it doesn't have to go anywhere or, you know, be anywhere. It is everywhere because of what it is. I mean, it doesn't have to be carried anywhere. It's just as much right here, you know, potentially as it is out in the fourth outer space level. You know, it's a mystery as to why something that really is everywhere decided to just identify right here with this particular self and not with, you know, a galaxy out in the fourth outer space level. But, you know, there's a mystery of mysteries there. But it could have, you know, if there were personalities out in the fourth outer space level, my personality could just as easily have identified out there as here. It's the same distance. It's... You know, before it identifies, it's everywhere. See, so that's where, you know, where is it during your sleeping? It's everywhere again. Where's the infinite one? What box holds the infinite one? No box, okay? The one's everywhere, okay? So it's everywhere.
So I've been thinking about this a lot, actually. And so personality is pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And when it attaches to us somehow,
mm-hmm.
It's attaching to our self.
Yep.
Now, where is our self in the equation? We have our gesture, we have our soul, we have our self.
Your self is a mindless self.
And those are personality factors.
Well, I mean, it's just your adjutant mindless self. So, you know, there's the adjutant mindal energy. You know, an activity fills all of Nebadon. But there's some way that that's sort of quasi-separated locally to make Sidney's relatively separate adjutant Mindel self. You know, one way you can maybe visualize that, you know, if you instead of trying to think of it three-dimensionally, if you just think of it two-dimensionally, so the full presence of adjutant mind is a sheet, okay, and if you grab a hold of that rubber sheet and pull it down, there's this little local well in it, you know, and there's the bottom of that well is Sidney's adjutant mindal self. Pull it down over here. Here's Chris's adjutant mindal self. You pull it down over here. There's, you know, Joan's adjutant mindal self. You know, we're in this little localized well. We're supposed to stay down there. We're not supposed to go floating okay. up. Okay.
So self is okay. that conception.
So. The beginnings of it. I mean,
that's when the mother spirit comes.
At conception, you have the first adjutant. So you start with a first adjutant self, and at some point, the second adjutant engaged, and now you have a first and second adjutant self, et cetera, until finally you have a full seven adjutant self. And then you get encircled in the Holy Spirit. See, and it's technically, you know, by grace, some of that full seven adjutant sevenfold adjutant self gets spiritualized, gets put up into the upper domain of the hourglass. So an initial measure of mindal self that's up in the upper domain by grace. You didn't have to choose to elevate it. It was elevated by grace, by the mother, when she encircled you in the Holy Spirit. So now there's a spiritualized mind. The first measure of spiritualized adjutant self. And that spirit pattern, that personality, can identify with that. See, technically it's identified with what's in the upper domain, not what's in the lower domain, because that's just animal, technically, you know, and animals aren't persons. All the way up to the neck of the hourglass, you know, even up to the heights of the seventh adjutant, just in and of itself, the seventh adjutant is, you know, is sub-spiritualized mind. Okay.
The words, yeah. Non-volitional mind.
It's not, it's not a mind of will dignity, just so in and of itself.
The upper domain is when volitional starts.
Right.
Volition starts acting.
Right. You're given that initial measure of mindal energy up there by grace. Unity is blended in with it to a little degree by grace. It's spiritualized mind. So it isn't literally spirit energy, but it's spirit-like enough that a spirit pattern, a personality, can identify with it.
Okay. That's the spirit of the Father because he's exercising will.
Well,
that's his basic spirit.
Well, but when you the personality, but in terms of that spiritualized mind, that's all done by the mother.
Right.
She establishes the nature, you know, and then the Father identifies with it.
Best, yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're really ourself is just a mind.
Yeah. You have a that all it is
all about our mind.
Yeah, and then your selfhood is even subtler. Your selfhood is, you know, is that idea of independent of a particular self, the self I have right now, the self I'll have in the first mansion world, the self I have in the second mansion world. You know, there is a common thread that goes through those that's your selfhood, okay? So you can kind of think of yourself as sort of wrapped around a core thread of selfhood, okay? And, you know, what goes to the next notch is just your selfhood, see, technically. And a new self is wrapped around it. You know, but by the time you get to the end of that life, the selfhood is grown. So you slough off less, you know, going to the next one.
So technically, then, our self is taking that personality pattern and making that unique.
Right. So that spirit pattern engages that spiritualized mind, and it, you know, it engages the spiritness of that spiritualized mind and injects purpose, you know, purposing into that spiritualized mind, where a lesser mind didn't have purposing engaging it anymore. And purposing is the ability to direct things to an eternal end. So you have no matter what your energy system is, you know, take any being in the universe, okay, no matter what their energy system is, personality can engage that and inject this purposing so, so that that energy now has some measure of directedness relative to eternity instead of just locally to time and space. There's something that has gained this far-sighted perspective and is trying to strike step with eternity. You know, initially it's very hard to see that very clearly, but it's attempting to reach, it's attempting to purpose this all the way to eternity instead of just to the moment. So you start with the first three adjutants, they're very in the moment. The next three adjutants are long-term. You know, see, it keeps growing. Remember how they tell you, you want to try to eternalize your mind. And you're given the scaffolding and steps out of the moment to something that's finally long-term enough that it can take the first measure of spiritualized nature. And then that can actually be, well, let's set that on a course all the way to eternity.
It says, I remember somewhere in the book, that what the seventh adjutant does is take the sixth adjutant of worship. It's in the Evolution of Religion papers and direct it upwards.
In the beginning of 92, I think, isn't it?
Yeah. And you know, it could be that even with the long-term adjutants, they're more long-term, but their trajectory is kind of, you know, off this way, you know, instead of this little stuff like the initial three. And it's kind of off. It's not, it doesn't have that. But as the Supreme grows, you know, it can encompass all of that as long as it's got a, you know, it's above the fault line of, right, you know, material, right, you know, gravity,
right,
you know.
Yeah.
So maybe that's what we.
Yeah. Got. Yeah. The key sense of that, see, is, you know, I've tried to emphasize that's the importance of adding an annotated additional name for each adjutant, mm-hmm, which you can think of more directly as the energy of. Because in and of itself, you know, the spirit of wisdom is not the spirit of wisdom. It's the energy of symmetry. It's not spiritualized yet, you know, just in and of itself, it's just mind, adjutant mind. It's not spiritualized adjutant mind. So all of them, the spirit of whatever, see, that's a name that's appropriate. The degree to which that adjutant has been spiritualized, and in terms of the picture you were just painting, you know, basically what that means, instead of it just having some random direction, and it's all sort of below the horizon level, you know, it's all pointing back down itself. Okay, once the seventh adjutant connects, so that there's a linkage now to spirit, mm-hmm, that can come into the top. That can, through the seventh adjutant, into all of them, it can get them, at least potentially, to flip their direction vertical. Yeah.
So they all got upward arrow.
So they all can have an upward arrow to them.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, right. Doesn't the seventh adjutant try to initially kind of corral the other adjutants?
Sure, right. Tries to.
It kind of restrains them.
I mean, it tries to establish what?
No, because they're all.
I mean, what's that? See, it tries. Its initial energy nature is symmetry. There's an urge there.
Yeah.
Okay. It just, by the kind of energy it is, it attempts to establish some symmetry in the system, mm-hmm, the right balance and proportion in the system. Okay. And then if that's spiritualized, that symmetry is uplifted into wisdom.
Yeah.
Okay. But you can't uplift, asymmetry into wisdom. First, there has to be symmetry, and then that symmetry is spiritualized as a thing we call wisdom.
That's what Lucifer cannot attain. They say we doubt he'll ever, his equilibrium.
Right.
And see, that's what the seventh adjutant brings in. It brings in, like you said, that balance on a high level, mm-hmm, and it's an equilibrium up there. You know, it's like a dancer balancing, it's like, you know.
Right. Now it's like, point, okay, now we can do something.
Relaxed and they just, you know.
Right. Now we can potentially do something profound. Yeah, that's what the seventh adjutant brings in.
Yeah.
Okay, so, all right, so does everyone kind of get what's going on there with, okay, all right, so that's, you know, I mean, just keep, you know, every time we bring up, we see an issue like this with personality, you know, try to get it a little clearer. It's a very complex thing, but just keep working on it. They keep giving you these opportunities to work on it and think about it a little bit more. All right, let's read some more.
The plan of initial mortal detention on seven worlds of progressive training is nearly universal in Orbantan. In each local system of approximately 1,000 inhabited planets, there are seven mansion worlds, usually satellites or sub-satellites of the system capital. They are the receiving worlds for the majority of ascending mortals.
Okay, well, there's a fun little tidbit again, kind of like the Nebadon comment above. Okay, see that? So in Orvintan, it's nearly universal that there are seven mansion worlds, but just nearly universal, even in Orvintan. So you just keep that in mind every time you're reading about the Ascension Scheme, and it seems like, well, everybody's got seven mansion worlds. No, apparently not everybody, even in Orvintan, right? It's like, well, how does that work? Well, remember, there's all kinds of things they haven't revealed to us. Maybe it is the case for everything, basically, that they've revealed to us. But the stuff they haven't revealed, if they had, we'd go, oh, yeah, those beings are not going to need mansion worlds because that's very different or whatever. And the very fact that they say that it's nearly universal in Orvintan, that it's a super universe thing now. Okay, remember, seven schemes? There's seven schemes in each of the seven super universes, but one of the schemes is dominant in each of the super universes. Ascension scheme is dominant in Orvintan. So you're kind of left to that question. Is that why it's nearly universal? And if the Ascension scheme's not dominant in, say, the first super universe, what does that, mean about this? Okay, so it's certainly sort of like begging that that speculation. Then notice the other little twist they throw in there that really changes the simplicity or the simplistic picture that we initially try to paint for ourselves to understand this cosmology. That the seven mansion worlds, it doesn't say that they're always the sub-satellites. I mean, or even that they're satellites and sub-satellites. It's usually satellites or sub-satellites. So apparently, for instance, in some local systems, apparently the seven mansion worlds are the seven primary satellites rather than seven satellites to sub-satellites around one of the primaries. And apparently there's some that, it's something totally different. Like, what does that mean? It's like they're like a special sort of like subsystem next to the system headquarters. They don't explain. Very mysterious. I mean, it's not worded where it's like, oh, well, there's the ones that don't have mansion worlds at all. I mean, no, this is like the ones that have mansion worlds, it's usually, so apparently there's some others. I mean, the one thing that we kind of have along that lines is that the Supreme Power Center in our local system is not on the architectural world. It's not on Jerusalem proper. It's on that dark island of space, nearby. See, so there's an example of sort of this satellite, if you will, system, the system that's part of the bigger local system headquarters, the fact that they're using a dark island of space for the, so maybe there's, if it's a region where there's lots and lots of structure or something. I mean, I don't know. It's kind of a curious statement. It seems to be suggesting then they wouldn't be architectural worlds, would they? Or would they? I mean, it's kind of a mysterious statement. They're in the process of saying that they're going to try to kind of explain this to us. They're throwing in these little tidbits. It's like, it's actually really, really complex. There's a lot of variations that we aren't even remotely revealing to you. So just always keep that in mind, that the universe is much more complex than this book even hints at. Okay.
It says, if you want to cross this 1,000 inhabited planets, mm-hmm. Is it interesting how our scientists and our culture in general is thinking a lot more in terms of possibility of other inhabited planets,
right?
I think a lot more than even 10 years ago, now that they're finding so many more planets out there.
Yeah, well, there's the normal, very, very conservative process that scientists go through, they, you know, they basically felt they had no right to assume that there was any other inhabited world in the universe, period, until they got the first direct evidence that another star had a planet around it, you know, and they so, you know, and there's some validity to that. I mean, if science is going to have any integrity, they can't be flying off on every, you know, wild initial assumption. They got to stick with the facts. But unfortunately, as we all know, they are flying off on all kinds of non-factual assumptions. But you still see this conservativeness in some areas, which is hopeful. But, you know, like I pointed out, in, you know, their overriding assumption about other inhabited planets, they start with the initial assumption that no, there are no inhabited planets in the entire, you know, observable universe. And then they try to work the probabilities and figure out, well, even though it's super low probability, you know, there may be this much chance of an inhabited world through magical processes, and you multiply that by the number of galaxies, you know, and you get this non-zero number for the number of inhabited worlds. See, the initial assumption is there's zero inhabited planets. Okay, the correct initial assumption, if you limit it to the seven superuniverses, the correct initial assumption is that every planet is inhabited. The proper initial assumption is it's 100% inhabited, and then you start backing off. It's like, well, except this one isn't because of this reason, and this one isn't of this. You know, that's the proper way that if you have the revelation, the way science should be approaching the problem is starting with 100% and whittling it down instead of starting at zero and trying to magically lift it up to a non-zero number.
Yeah.
Okay.
How the universe is.
Okay. So, right. The universe was only, period, made to be inhabited. There's no other purpose to it. Okay, so the proper initial assumption is 100%. And you go, well, except, okay, Jupiter's not inhabited because there's no surface, and, you know, and it's, you know, you start taking them off. You know, that's the way you should be doing it. Okay. Where were we here? Oh, yeah, right there. Yeah. Yeah, well, I think we're ready to go to the next paragraph here. Yeah.
Sometimes all training worlds of mortal residents are called universe mansions. And it was to such spheres that Jesus alluded when he said, "In my Father's house are many mansions." From here on, within a group, given group of spheres like the mansion worlds, ascenders will progress individually from one sphere to another and from one phase of life to another. But they will always advance from one stage of universe study to another in class formation.
Okay, two little things there. Now they're giving us a little sense. You know, when they say that sometimes all training worlds of mortal residents are called universe mansions, it's like, oh, so they have English on, you know, all over? No, of course, that's not what they mean. You know, what is the sort of the root meaning of the word mansion? Does anyone know? I mean, in a lot of more modern Bible translations, you'll see this. Instead of "in my Father's house are many mansions,"
they say rooms.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I say room, but I mean it's dwelling.
Dwelling.
Okay, it's more. You know, and so see, they're saying that there is a tendency, you know, in some circles in some celestial circles, to just call all the Morantia worlds dwelling places, mansions. Okay, that's what they're saying there. The revelators here decided to limit it, the use of the term mansion or dwelling place, to just the first seven. Okay, that was, and you go, why did they do that? Well, see, that's probably to make it more properly evolutional in construct. What they're basically saying between the lines there is that if you've had anyone who has had a genuine vision, you know, through self-acting adjuster, you know, process of giving someone a genuine vision, this sort of thing, if you have some record that kind of you have some record that really suggests to you that someone observed a dwelling place on high, they're saying that by and large, those were just visions of the first seven mansion worlds and not the ones. Like they tell you that there have been people in history who have been given greater visions so that the seven heavens, you know, quote-unquote, aren't just the seven mansion worlds. But they're the whole hierarchy, where the seventh is paradise?
Actually, it's in the Quran.
Okay. What was that?
It's in the Quran.
Right. I mean, you have these, you know, these, you know, see, these places where there's seven heavens. See, you know, they tell you, you need to look in there and decide, you know, which, you know, I mean, first of all, is there any validity to it? I mean, do you think it really ties to a vision, or is it just numerology that's been inserted in, the, you know, in the writing? You know, but if you think it might actually be tied to something, you know, that genuinely happened, did the person get some vague sense of the first seven mansion worlds? If there's any context, you might be able to tell that. Or did they get something bigger? You know, is it the whole picture where the mansion worlds is just the first heaven, Gerasim is two, you know, the constellation is three, the local universe headquarters is four, Universe is five, Havona is six, and Paradise is seven. Okay. All right. So you know, they tell you that there have been those who have been given this some vague notion that really goes beyond the mansion worlds like this.
It cut through Adam and Eve. Did
they have revealed something? Adam and Eve, no. Remember, what do they reveal in terms of a cosmology? Right, they only reveal up to the constellation level. Right.
Maybe they
cannot. Right, so, and that's why, you know, it says it literally in the book, that it, the reason that you have a notion of seven heavens that goes beyond the mansion worlds is because it's a vision thing. It's not because of someone's revealed it. They tell you that point blank, that it comes from occasional, you know, genuine visions, you know, just or supplied visions. Okay. So anyway, I mean, that would be the most likely reason why they decided to limit dwelling place to just that, because apparently in our written records or something, you know, that's the more appropriate evolutional use for us, rather than using it to describe the whole thing. Okay. They're always thinking very precisely about those things, trying to, you know, to keep it as tightly tied to what we already have as possible, not, you know, going beyond that. okay, and in that spirit, when I was talking about the greater seven heavens, you know, you notice in that, they tell you it's, okay, the mansion worlds together is one. Gerasim is two. See, Gerasim separate from the seven mansion worlds in that picture. Okay, that's between the lines of what they just said there at the end. Okay, you wake up in the first mansion world, and you're moving through the mansion worlds as an individual. You know, if you're precocious, you know, you're chugging along through the mansion worlds. Okay? But you don't, no matter how precocious you are, you don't, as an individual, chug over to become a Gerasim citizen. No one does that as an individual. You take in, there are classes that are graduated from the seventh mansion world to Gerasim. So, you know, there's nothing arbitrary about how many people are on Gerasim at any given time, you know, which is what, you know, the Supreme would effectively be doing to it. If you just let the Supreme, you know, dictate how many people feed onto Gerasim all the time, no. So that's locked down. You're put there in classes. So just, you know, the number that they can handle on Gerasim at a given time, and it's, you know, what we've seen, it's not a huge number. That's why there were so few on Gerasim at the time of the rebellion, because it's just a class structure that's there. You don't know if it's just one class or if there, you know, maybe multiple classes in that number, but it's a definitive class, you know, number there. And from there also, a class goes to the constellation. You know, there's not individuals streaming off like they're saying here. Classes go to the local universe capital. Classes go to the minor sector, okay? But within those domains, you know, it's very individual, and you get to all the worlds of Indentia at the constellation level, you know, you're going to be an individual chugging through that whole complicated socialization system. But you're going to leave, you know, in a class. Okay. You know, so that, I just wanted to just stress that again, because that's just, it's a very important thing that they try to stress a few times so that you don't get yourself confused about how this works. You know, like people have so often gotten confused about that getting to Gerasim thing during the rebellion. Okay, let's do one more of these, and then we'll probably wrap it up here.
Four. Orange progressors. From the mansion worlds on up through the spheres of the system, constellation, and the universe, mortals are classed as Morantia progressors. They are traversing the transition spheres of mortal ascension. As the ascending mortals progress from the lower to the higher of the Morantia worlds, they serve on countless assignments in association with their teachers and in company with their more advanced and senior brethren.
Okay, so that we were kind of talking about that with the whole visiting thing, remember, you know, last time. You know, so here they're giving you a little more specifics. It's not just going out on a field trip with your teacher. There's also things that are you have advanced and senior brethren that are leading the excursion. You know, and we saw that when they were talking about how there's, you know, the next notch up is always coming down to instruct. You know, so you can obviously see how that might fit into that. Let's see, there was another thing in there too. It's just that right there towards the end. They serve on countless assignments. Okay, so, you know, this also just, you know, worried about, well, how limited is this? Is this a really, you know, narrow educational regime that you're feeding into? Apparently not, because they literally just say countless, okay? So, you know, I think you don't have to worry about it being too confined. It's apparently just, you know, like, and that would make sense, like we were talking about. It's a very dynamic universe that we're ascending into. So, you know, it's likely, you know, right now if they actually tried to give us some numbers, it would probably be just scary. You know, it's like, and you're going to be go on 150 trillion, you know, it's best just to say countless probably at this point until we're ready to handle the magnitude of what will be going on. But just, you know, always remember, you know, it'll be a supreme delight always, you know, and just delight in the fact that even though you can't imagine it now, you're going to love the complexity. You're going to love the dynamic. All right.
Morantia progression pertains to continuing advancement of intellect, spirit, and personality form. Survivors are still three-natured beings. Throughout the entire Morantia experience, they are wards of the local universe. The regime of the super-universe does not function until the spirit career begins.
Just that one little quick thing there. We've talked about how, you know, there's three levels in the local universe in terms of this ascension, because individuality, the local system level, associativity, the constellation level, unity, the local universe headquarters level, individualized associative unity, threefold. You know, they're just reminding you that not only in what the environment that you're in is there that threefoldness, but you still embody that threefoldness. There's intellect, spirit, and personality form. In other words, there's associativity, unity, and individuality. Okay, yeah. Personality form, okay. You maintain a three nature. You're always going to be this threefold system of individuality, associativity, and unity. Yourself is in the middle of the associativity, you know, trying to come into greater in relationship with individuality on one side and unity on the other side, you know, and be the superadditive consequence of that more definitive connection to the two sides more and more all the time, so that you're a greater and greater self, a more and more superadditive self, okay? It's literal. If you didn't have a personality form, there wouldn't be one side of that equation. There would be no super additivity potential. How could you ever grow? Okay. People who try to imagine a next life that's devoid of form, where you go into some formless, blissful unity state, well, you're consigning yourself to zero growth, then. To, you know, No, you, what you want, you want to be able to have an even more definitive individuality that you can bring into relationship with an even more expansive unity so that you can have an even greater superadditive consequence. You're looking for more and more individuality, not less and less, if you want to grow. All right, let's see, what else do we have here?
Mortals acquire a real spirit identity just before they leave the local universe headquarters for the receiving worlds of the minor sectors of the super universe. Passing from the final Marantia stage to the first or lowest spirit status is but a slight transition. The mind, personality, and character are unchanged by such an advance. Only does the form undergo modification. But the spirit form is just as real as the Marantia body, and it is equally discernible.
Okay. You know, and that's tied to what I was just saying. I mean, technically, it's even more definitively individuated than before. That's what you're striving, you know, what you're moving into is a more and more definitive individuation. Okay? And you know, they're pointing there's no magical thing here, that it's a you know, it's not a step function going from that highest Marantia form to that first stage form. You know, it's just this sort of, it's a gradually, apparently, you know, step. You know, it's just a seamless step where everything stays unchanged. It's just that now you have this new greater concreteness of individuality because you're going to start the process over again. You're going to engage a higher level of individuality, the minor sector level. You're going to go up through a higher level of associativity at the major sector level to a super universe measure of completeness of unity at the super universe capital. See, so you're re-individuated, see, is what they're saying. That's the only thing that changed, is you're re-individuated so that there's a whole new potential of bringing that new individuality into relationship with an even greater unity so that the self can grow. Yeah? So that, you know, you're seeing the dynamics of how this works. So yeah, it's just, you go individualized associativity unity, individualized associativity unity. And then like we said, when you go to Havona, then everything is reciprocated. And unity becomes your foundation now. And you're, the kind of individuality you can strive for there is what begins with unity and goes up through an associativity to an individuality that begins to transcend the unity of the super universes on an individual basis. And okay,
does it become a super personality?
Yeah, right. Well, you're no, it's not yet, but yeah, but you're heading towards that. You just kind of took it right out of my mouth there. Right. See, you know, you need to be striving for an individuality that eventually can be so transcendent that it can shake hands with the supreme being. An individuality that transcends the finite, okay? And so that kind of an individuality sort of begins with the unity of things in the finite and tries to go beyond that. Okay. All right. Let's get this last paragraph in.
Before departing from their native local universes for the super universe receiving worlds, the mortals of time are recipients of spirit confirmation from the Creator Son and the local universe Mother Spirit. From this point on, the status of the ascending mortal is forever settled. Super universe wards have never been known to go astray. Ascending seraphim are also advanced in angelic standing at the time of their departure from the local universes.
See, so that's a great place to end. We end right where we began, see, with them pointing out, you know, that there's a very definitive sort of celebration, if you will, of that integrity that you now have. See how they worded it there? Before departing from the native local universes for the super universe receiving worlds, the mortals of time are recipients of spirit confirmation. Okay? From the Creator Son and the local universe Mother Spirit. Like we said, I mean, that's going to be very sort of just immediately literal with a sun-fused mortal. I mean, they literally get this spirit fragment. It's like spirit confirmation, okay? okay, but see, they're pointing out it's for everyone. okay, including, say, ascending seraphim, that they're pointing out, you know, what they're confirming here is this reformation of form. They're saying that you now have spiritual strength like you never had before. You are literally a spirit form now. You aren't reaching up for it anymore. You've gotten a hold of it, and you've pulled it down and wrapped it around you. You've encased yourself in it. Okay? Now try to assail me. You know, with the shield of spirit, okay, not only can't you get at me, but I'm rock solid. There's nothing fuzzy about me anymore. I'm a rock solid individual now. So much so that they allow me to be basically self-governing as I go forward from here. Okay? I'm contained within the integrity of spirit, and it shields me from all us, you know, all assailers, okay? All that which would assail me. I mean, now, for an angel, that would be like a really, you know, incredible thing to have given to you. Is this, you know, when the Creative Mother Spirit remakes the angel so that the angel can unplug from her mind and go outside of the local universe and, okay, it has this new, you know, individual integrity that it doesn't, you know, have by nature. You know, for us, I mean, okay, I mean, I was integrous from the moment I fused, probably, clear back on the fifth mansion world or something, okay? But, you know, it's still significant enough that they say, I'm going to get this official spirit confirmation that it's all, before my integrity was still hidden, you know, inside to a degree, because I was wrapped in Marantia and it hid it. I'm peeling off the Marantia until finally I have the last skin of Marantia around that spirit core, and I peel it off, and they declare me to be, you know, reborn. Now my spirit's on the outside, not on the inside, for all to see. Yeah. All right, so then we'll finish the rest of the story next time. well, it's and we'll probably get into, you know, the beginning of the story with the finaliters. Let's just take a moment here and reflect on it.